The best argument to disprove the existence of God is one that goes something like this. How can we say that God exists in a world like this? And St. Thomas Aquinas, who lived in the 13th century, gave a great deal of thought to this question. And I'm going to call upon this great philosopher, this great theologian of our tradition, to help us this day to answer the question, how can we say that God exists in a world like this? So listen to what St. Thomas says, really here arguing in such a way that it disproves the existence of God. And this is what people argued in the 13th century, and this is what people continue to argue in the 21st century, especially the new atheists. St. Thomas writes, "It seems that God does not exist because if one of two contraries be infinite, the other would altogether be destroyed. But the word God means that God is infinite goodness. If therefore God existed, there would be no evil discoverable. But there is evil in the world. Therefore, God does not exist." You see, St. Thomas is equating God with goodness and saying that, well, when we look at the world that we all experience, we see evil everywhere at hand. Therefore, this good God cannot exist. Peter Kreeft, who is one of the most respected philosophers in the church today, Bishop Barron, who is one of the most respected bishops in the church today, both maintain that this is perhaps one of the greatest arguments to disprove the existence of God. And so we therefore have to ask another question. How can there be an infinitely good and loving God given that there seems to be infinite badness? A couple of years ago, I remember listening to a documentary on the CBC about Vimy Ridge, that battle that happened 102 years ago on the 9th of April, so last week in the year 1917. This was one of the most important battles for the Canadians in the First World War, but it also represents something that then became endemic in the 20th century. 11,000 Canadian soldiers were killed, and in 4 days, 400,000 German and Allied soldiers were killed. And then when you look at the history of the 20th century, page after page after page, chapter after chapter after chapter, of one horror after another, of this kind of mass slaughter. So rightfully, people ask, how can there be a God in a world that allows for Vimy Ridge and so much of the history of the 20th century? And then how can there be a God when babies die, when teenagers and young adults die, when people in their 20s contract cancers that cannot be healed? And many of you here today, perhaps living with chronic pain. How can there be a God when there is so much suffering in our lives? And so Aquinas, as he continues to think about this, speaks about a God of infinite goodness, wisdom, and power. And listen to what he says. "Since God is the highest good, he would not allow any evil to exist in his works unless his omnipotence and goodness were such as to bring even out of evil a good." That is part of the infinite goodness of God, that he should allow evil to exist and out of it produce good. So we think, for instance, of the Second World War, and we think of someone like St. Maximilian Kolbe, who was willing to give up his life so that a man could go free, who cried out and said, "Don't kill me, I have a wife and children." And Maximilian Kolbe starved to death in that bunker. But here's the amazing thing. The man whom he delivered from death was in St. Peter's Square on the day when St. Maximilian Kolbe was made a saint. Out of the horror of that Nazi evil. This is an example of an infinite good. But Aquinas isn't done with his answer yet, because you see, he's not so much giving us a logical formula, he's inviting us into a story. He's wanting us to interpret the evil data in the universe in a way that takes seriously the existence of God. And so this is what he goes on to write. God is wise and sees that allowing physical evils in nature will result in a better world, and allowing moral evils in human life by creating humans with free will will result in a better history. So we have to understand there are two kinds of evil. There is physical evil and there is moral evil. Physical evil are things like death, earthquakes, hurricanes, disease, pain, weakness. Moral evils are things like hate, injustice, lies, etc. So Aquinas says the following, that God does not make these evils happen, but he allows them to happen. So we're getting somewhere. God's not the author of evil. That's good. But if he's a good God, why does he allow evil to happen? Surely if he was good, he would stop it all. And so Aquinas goes on to talk about a greater good that God is able to bring about even through moral and physical evil. When he talks about physical evil, again, things like suffering, earthquakes, etc., he talks in the following way. He says that the universe is a great work of art, like a picture of a story. And God allows for this kind of physical evil for the greater good of the whole. If you think about a work of art, it has all sorts of subordinate parts. And say if you're looking at an amazing painting, but you're only looking at one corner of it where everything is dark, that's all you will see. But in order to see the masterpiece, you have to get perspective, you've got to get distance. And then from that distance, you can see how all of the component parts are integrated and fit together. And so St. Thomas says, a work of art subordinates the part to the whole, and it requires imperfection in some parts of the painting. But what about moral evil? Aquinas's explanation for God allowing it to exist has to do with the nature of our free will, and that he, God himself, has entered into our world in the person of Jesus Christ in the act of supreme love. He has given his life in order to save ours. Now I want to quote Peter Kreeft, who puts it this way. The world that we live in, the story that you and I are part of, it's a surprise, it's a drama, it's a fairy tale. Instead of a formula, God wrote a play, and he gave it to characters who have goofed their lines. But listen to what Kreeft goes on to say. A messy play is better than a perfect formula, especially if it ends happily. One of the things Peter Kreeft says about every story, it's set up, it's upset, and it is reset. It's set up, it's upset, and it's reset. And you look at any good movie, you look at any great novel, they all have that narrative arc. And that is the narrative arc of the Bible. It's the narrative arc of your life and of mine. And so now we're beginning to be able to answer the question, how can we say God exists in a world like this? For you see, it's better to have free human beings, even if some of them do terrible things by misusing their power of free will, to choose great evils and inflict this on other human beings. But here's the heart of the whole thing. And that's why every Palm Sunday, Mass goes longer than any other day of the year. Because we need to hear the story. We need to hear the story of God confronting moral evil. And nowhere is this on greater display. You cannot find it in any literature, anywhere, outside of the Gospels, of God in the person of Jesus Christ confronting moral evil. And let me just highlight again a few of the things from our story. Jesus sweats blood, while Peter, James, and John, because of their grief, are deeply in asleep. Jesus is betrayed by Judas. And the irony of it, and we hear this in Luke's gospel, Judas, you would betray me with a kiss? How often is a kiss that is to be an expression of the deepest intimacy used as a form of abuse? It happens all the time. The apostles are cowards. They flee, with Peter then denying even having known Jesus. The religious leaders are willing to slander Jesus to get their way. Pilate knows Jesus is innocent, a theme reiterated throughout all four Gospels. And over in Matthew, remember, his wife says, "Honey bunny, have nothing to do with that man. He is innocent." And it's striking. Do you know how Pilate ended his life? Soon after this, he was sent back to Rome. And around the year AD 36, he committed suicide. Pilate, like Judas, committed suicide. It's so important for us to listen to the passion story from Matthew on Palm Sunday and Luke, as I've referred to both of these accounts. And every Good Friday, we'll do this again. We will listen to John's account of the passion. Let me conclude by quoting Pope Emeritus Benedict, who wrote a three-volume book called Jesus of Nazareth. In speaking about the passion of Jesus Christ, Pope Benedict wrote, "In Jesus' passion, all the filth of the world touches the infinitely pure one, the soul of Jesus Christ, and hence the Son of God himself. Through this contact, the filth of the world is truly absorbed, wiped out, and transformed in the pain of infinite love. Because infinite good is now at hand in the man Jesus, the counterweight to all wickedness is present and active within world history." Isn't that good? That Jesus is the counterweight to all evil. And he is far heavier, far more powerful. And the Pope then concludes, "And Jesus is the good that is infinitely greater than the vast mass of evil, however terrible it may be." We cannot avoid suffering in our lives. We cannot avoid the effects of physical suffering, and often we cannot avoid the effects of moral suffering. And it leads countless of our contemporaries to conclude, there is no God in a world like this. But we are thankful that we are Catholic Christians. We are thankful that for 2,000 years, in every society, every country, every language, this story has been told, because this is the only story that ultimately matters. This is the only story that ultimately makes sense of evil. And it's because of this story that, although we can't come to a complete answer this side of heaven, we can begin to answer the question, how can we say God exists in a world like this? Look to Jesus Christ and his passion for the answer.